Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. From the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network for movie talk, and the schmoes know, this is Meet the Movie Press. Roundtable movie news and commentary from the industry's premier film journalists.
Happy Friday, everyone. This is Meet the Movie Press. Hello. I was going to do the hashtag thing, but we got one guy that did it last week. Hashtag TGIFMTMP. It's thank God it's Friday. It is Meet the Movie Press. I am Mark Riley, editor-in-chief of schmoesno.com.
Jeff Snyder, sleepy film reporter, therap.com.
I love this. We have a great show, guys. My God, do we have so much to talk about.
So much.
There is so much to talk about. We have a fantastic guest coming in, a professional through and through from the Meet the Movie Press world, William Bibbiani from Crave Online, and the host of the B... I got it here.
The B-Movies podcast.
Sorry, I'm a little out of it today. I was watching the Star Wars trailer 37 times in a row. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm good. I'm ready for like a packed Friday. I've got some scoops to drop.
Yeah.
We've got a little scoopage. We've got tons of things to talk about.
Yeah, we do.
It was a busy week.
We did our show last week, and then as we left and I was driving up for a little vacation, you were doing some work, there was a lot of news that dropped, even over the weekend.
Guys, let me tease what we are going to cover in today's show, okay? Spider-Man, Star Wars, a ton of DC stuff.
Yep.
Blade Runner, Wonder Woman drama, Flash Gordon, Captain Marvel, X-Men, Daredevil, Ultron, Dark Tower, Fantastic Beasts, Power Rangers, the Aquaman, the list is endless.
This is insane. And yesterday kind of ground to a halt to have the Star Wars trailer drop.
Sure.
And then I was like, I don't think anything else is going to break. And then we had the Blade Runner news.
Sure.
So this is huge. I'm excited.
Let's bring William out here right now.
Guys, everywhere, this is William Bibbiani. He is the film channel editor of Crave Online and the host of the B-Movies podcast. William, come on in.
Ooh.
Oh, he's getting... Yes.
Nice.
Oh, he's got some music. All right. No canned applause for you. You get your own theme song. That's how we do it here.
The Italian Stallion.
The Italian Stallion. Put those cans on so you can hear what's going on.
There we go.
I want you to hear the soothing sounds of my voice.
Thank you very much.
That's right. William, how are you, my friend?
I am adequate. Thank you for asking.
Adequate.
Really,
I like adequate.
Yeah, it's quite early for me.
Yeah, it's early here on Fridays for us, but we do it. Like, I don't even know what episode we're on, but we've been doing it since August
of
2014.
Where's my paycheck?
we're all here because we love it.
For the love of the game, guys.
For the love of the game.
And I'm not getting paid. That's what I'm
doing. No, you get paid in Twitter. Here's some notifications. I don't know.
No.
William,
hey.
I've known you for a while now. I met you, I think, once at a screening.
That happens a lot.
It happens a lot.
We know each other and then we don't meet for years.
But we run in the same circles, Twitter, you know, we follow each other, blah, 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 you know, and then I'm like, we got to get William on. And I tweeted him, I DM'd him. And said, "What the hell are you doing? You want to come on?" And he was like, "I'm honored."
I was like, "What was it like when you got that invitation?"
You know, it felt like I finally made it.
Yeah,
it really did. It felt like finally someone noticed.
You called your parents.
I did. I called my surviving parent.
That's great. Nice.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I like to take it down a notch. Thank you for having me on. I enjoy the show, and I love the desk.
Yeah.
That's pretty great.
This is our spaceship.
This is quite fancy. I got to tell you, we do the B Movies podcast typically like out of my apartment.
Mm-hmm.
So
nice.
This is pretty sweet. Yeah.
We built it ourselves. Yeah, we built it ourselves, or rather
mud and sticks.
The Popcorn Talk Network, which is our network here for Meet the Movie Press, as well as Guilty Movie Pleasures and Profiles with Manson Malone and Jedi Alliance and the main show schmoesno.com. Mm. Who else am I missing? DC, there's so many. DC news and Marvel news.
This is the desk for all of them.
A lot of great people
have sat at this desk.
Yeah.
So tell us, how did you get into this crazy business of entertainment journalism?
I actually, it's kind of the opposite of how a lot of people did. I was actually working towards like getting into development. I had gone to film school and I studied screenwriting, and then the economy just sort of collapsed.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Yeah, like Eddie Izzard's out of flan in a cupboard, just. And this was the only thing I could get paid to do. But that was like 5 years ago, and now this is my passion. Like, this is really what I love doing. I think I fell in the right direction.
Yeah.
I ended up starting to do like some criticism for sites like Geekscape or the California Literary Review, Machinima.
Geekscape, huh? With Jonathan London?
With Jonathan London.
Yeah, he's a good friend of mine.
He gave me one of my first big breaks. He was great.
Hey, all right.
Jonathan's awesome. Wherever you are, love you.
Yeah.
Then started doing some freelance work for Crave Online, and then they were looking for a new editor, and I've been there pretty much full time, ever since, for like the past 4+ years.
That's great.
I've set up their podcast, the B-Movies podcast, over like 260 episodes right now.
Wow.
We got some good guests. We had Paul Feig on this week.
Very cool.
Nick Kroll next week. So it's good stuff, everybody. It's on iTunes.
All right.
I'm co-hosting a web series over there called Most Crave, which is kind of like this, but a lot more conversational and casual, a lot more like The View, more reactionary.
We're just like The View. What are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I like to think of myself as Star Jones, personally. it's a great gig. We got some really wonderful stuff on the side. Got a great interview with Michael Douglas up there today.
Ooh, I want to see that movie, Beyond the Reach.
Beyond the Reach. Beyond the Reach. It's not his best movie, or even a particularly good one, but it was cool. The interview, it turns out he's now producing new Shirley Jackson adaptations, like The Lottery is going to be a new movie, and cool. We've Always Lived in the Castle, so that's cool.
Nice.
Great stuff.
Well, we got, guys, as I mentioned, packed show. You guys are all on here. We even have Elmi Imbe is on the chat room right now.
Oh, my.
I love it. Shout out to our boy who's been on the show a couple times. So, guys, what do you want to talk about?
Let's start with the Star Wars teaser.
Yeah, I think that's, giving, the 800-pound Wookiee in the room.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it. Blew up the internet. As a huge Star Wars nerd, fan, crazy person, I absolutely loved it. I have watched it probably at least 10 times. Yesterday.
Were there tears?
Yeah, what is with that? Were there the tears?
There were tears. I did say on Twitter that I cried. However, that was an exaggeration. I will say this. When I heard Chewie, we're home, and that shot of Han and Chewie, I went...
I will say this. That is definitely the best moment.
It hit all the right parts for me. It was so interesting to see. It looked like he was on the Millennium Falcon. Yeah. It looked like it was like he actually, if the rumors are true, he had lost the Millennium Falcon. I'm not sure if that's true or not. So, guys, I guess, spoiler alert.
Lando won it back in a car.
Lando won it back.
Yeah.
But it looked like he finally found the Millennium Falcon again and was like, we're home.
Yeah.
If that's the case, I love that. But I loved the home reference was like almost like, hey, we got the crew back together.
Right.
We've got the magic back. We're home, guys.
It's a metaphorical home.
And that's why I'm kind of mixed on it. Like, the entire Star Wars is neat.
We were talking off camera a little bit.
My thing with Star Wars is this. I grew up liking Star Wars. I was not a huge Star Wars nerd. Star Wars wasn't the film I saw that made me go, what cinema? Like, it's the first trilogy is damned good. The first two are undisputable classics. Third one is a bit more mixed, but it's still really great.
Yeah.
And every other Star Wars movie we've had ever since has been at best kind of bad.
Yeah.
So I
agree with
you. And depending on how you count, man, that's like makes that like only like 1/3 of all the Star Wars movies have been anywhere. Because you count the Ewok movies, you count the animated movies, sorry. Mm-hmm. So all the good ones are right at the beginning, and I don't see a lot of reason to assume that this one is going to be great. The trailer looks neat, but trailers have lied to us before, especially trailers for J.J. Abrams.
Sure.
Movies.
Sure.
So it looks neat, but just the whole fan service thing, quoting like, my father had it. My sister had it.
Oh, I love
it. I have it. And we're basically just going to repeat the plot again. We have no new ideas, really, honestly. I mean, look, we even put Darth Vader's helmet in. The first shot, actually, I like the first shot. I thought the first shot was kind of neat.
The first shot was beautiful.
The first shot was cool. It was a great sense of scale. You know, you see that land speeder really tiny in the background, and there's like a big X-Wing. I guess it was an X-Wing.
X-Wing.
And then you see the giant Star Destroyer. And I was like, oh, that's kind of classy. Oh, but that's all you got. You're just going to be rehashing a bunch of stuff. And I don't see how that works. works terribly well. It seems like the Star Trek approach, where we're going to basically try to evoke all the stuff you already like, mm-hmm. and basically force you to compare it with the good stuff.
Hmm.
So if we're even mediocre, we're going to look like crap. Like, I think that's a terrible approach. I think it's a dangerous approach. But, you know, my thing is this. I don't believe in getting too hyped up for anything before you've seen it. I know a trailer can look cool. Like, the new Mad Max trailer, holy cow. Yeah. Like, it looks amazing. But I haven't seen the movie yet. I don't know if it's actually good.
Right. 300 looked amazing.
Exactly.
So we all know how that turned out.
Exactly. So,
I kind of like 300, though.
I know you did.
It's okay.
Which is why it's good. I'm your co-host.
Yeah, I know, right? Anyway, I need this balance.
Anyway, my point is, I'm waiting to see if the movie is good before I say if the movie is good.
Right.
I get it.
The trailer looks neat. And there's some cool stuff in it. Maybe, right? Wouldn't that be cool to have a good new Star Wars movie for the first time since the early 80s?
Well, I think I speak as the fan on the panel. Yes. I want to hear, Jeff, you say. I know you have something to say.
No, continue.
No, I just think, you know, yeah, am I judging it on the trailer? Yes. Am I assuming it's going to be good because of JJ? Yes. Do I love the Vader helmet? Yes. Do I love the old iconography of the Star Destroyers and the Millennium Falcon and bringing back all the good stuff from the good trilogy, not the prequels, the good trilogy? Yes. Absolutely. And so I am very biased, I think.
Sure.
I just can't help it.
And here's the thing. You know, they had that Star Wars celebration yesterday.
Yeah.
And they had, you know, everyone talking about, hey, we're a family. And you are. That's great. I mean, it's really great that one movie or one idea or one continuing story can have that impact on people and bring people together with a shared sense of imagination. All of that is, oh, it's so awesome. And you see that with Star Trek, people like inspired by Gene Roddenberry's idea of a better tomorrow, mm-hmm. wanting to bring that tomorrow and today. Fantastic. I'm a Marvel fanboy. I love pretty much everything they've done. They're not perfect, but like, you know, I can criticize and still love it. My thing is, it's just I'm not a Star Wars fanboy. I come at it from a slightly more, I guess I would hope, a slightly more objective point of view.
I think that's
valid too. But
yeah.
But like, look, if it's awesome, it'll be awesome. I can't wait for it to be awesome. I hope it's awesome, but I just don't know until I've seen it.
There you go.
Well, I am with you. I am not a Star Wars fanboy. I've seen the trailer two or three times now. I thought it looked great. I'm just really excited about the actors involved in this film.
Great cast.
This feels like the first Star Wars movie that could sort of get me into the franchise, so to speak.
Yeah.
So you haven't even gotten into it at all? Like, you've never really...
I saw the first three a long time ago. I actually remember liking Return of the Jedi the most as a kid. I think I liked Jabba the Hutt.
As a kid, I loved it.
Yeah. I have not seen Phantom Menace or Attack of the Clones.
Yeah.
Which so, you don't really need to. I mean, speaking as a Star Wars fan, you know, I couldn't get past the prequels. I just couldn't like them as much. Now I'm taking a different approach.
Yeah, sure.
Just because you're a fan doesn't mean you have to like everything that's involved with it. That's ridiculous.
Well, I drank the Kool-Aid. You know, I walked out of Phantom Menace and I went, no, it was good. I was forcing myself to like it. I got in an argument with my roommate at the time saying, because he was like, no, that was shit. That was complete shit. I can't believe we just watched that. I'm like, did you invent the lightsaber? Did you, like, don't you?
There's a sense of denial, I think, that comes when you want to love something and then you're confronted with it. And, it, you know, even The Phantom Menace isn't a complete watch. There's some incredible visuals in there.
Sure.
There were some various leaps forward in technology. There was a cool fight, you know. Like, it's not the worst movie ever. I think that's a huge exaggeration. I hate it when people do that. But, I remember when I first saw it, I had bought tickets to see Phantom Menace twice. I bought it on an opening morning on Friday, and then I had bought tickets to see it again at the Grauman's Chinese.
Okay,
the day after. And I saw it the opening morning, and I was basically just justifying to myself not returning the ticket. Like, I bought the ticket. I need to commit to this. I'm going with friends. Like, you know, I can't do it. Like, but yeah, I mean, this is my thing with anticipation. This is why I think it can be somewhat of a dangerous thing, is because you're not allowing yourself to judge something fairly. If it's totally awesome, it's just going to be awesome, and it's not going to be a problem. If it's not awesome, and if you measured your expectations a bit, you can say to yourself, well, that didn't entirely work, but I had some fun. Like, you know, what do you want?
Yeah, I just imagine if every movie had this, like Avengers Celebration Day and Hunger Games celebrate? I mean, they probably do by now.
Age of Adeline, Celebration Day. I can't wait.
It's like we're going to put out a set. Yeah. It's just, anyways, we're going to move on from Star Wars.
Yeah. There's really nothing. I mean, you know, it looks great. I mean, we have three different opinions on it, you know.
And you have your own.
And you have your own. You guys, you know, Star Wars is going to kill no matter what, no matter who, what fan you are. Chewy. Jeff, where should we?
I did.
We're home.
Yes!
Oh, God.
Okay, sorry.
I did sit down with Donald Gleason this week for a Drinking with the Stars episode.
Yeah, I love that, man.
He was very cool.
I was hoping
and
to
he told us everything about Star Wars. So tune in when we put that video up.
That's not true, is it? I was almost gonna be able to compare notes with you. Alicia Malone and I were gonna possibly do an interview with him. Uh-huh. Didn't work out. Yeah. I got very close. I was very excited. Not so much.
Okay.
What
so
next? My God.
We are going to get my scoops out right now.
Let's do it. Scoop time.
Okay. So we've got a lot of DC stuff to cover.
Yes,
we're
gonna
do. Start with the truth behind Jim Parrott's character in Suicide Squad.
Let's hear it.
You know, there were some reports that he may be playing Deathstroke.
Right.
And then I think his girlfriend, Levin Rambin, or who, I don't know, you know, their affiliation or whatever, but she was like, he's not playing Deathstroke, and yet he was like retweeting Deathstroke fan art. It was very weird.
He was trolling.
So here's what I'm told. I'm told that from reliable sources that Jim Parrott is in fact playing Johnny Frost.
Johnny Frost. Who the hell is that?
That is the Joker's like sidekick slash driver, and he is like one of the main characters in the Joker the graphic novel by Brian Azzarello.
Yeah,
that's a great one.
Huh. Johnny Frost, Jim Parrott.
So that just became
interesting.
That just went from being like an awesome news story, like, oh, it's Deathstroke, to he's playing the Joker's chauffeur. Like, that's down a little bit. I feel like that's fine. If it's accurate, great. It just strikes me as sort of funny.
Yeah, again,
like, you know, we built it up.
I don't know what we. You know, first of all, I don't know who's playing Deathstroke.
Yeah.
He's in it, though. Do we know that for sure?
I mean, that's the word on the street. You know, there's so many characters in this rogue gallery of Batman, which seems to be all Batman villains in the Suicide Squad thing.
Well,
but
certainly some crossover ones. Yeah.
There's some crossovers. Yeah, I am not, and admittedly, I am not up on my Suicide Squad. I never got into the comics.
Right.
So some of these, the only characters I know come from my love of Batman. So like Harley Quinn, Joker. Yeah, I get it.
I think Deadshot can be a Batman villain, but I don't think he's intrinsically a Batman
villain. There you go. I think that's true. So, you know, and Miembe is up on the, on our board, and he has dropped many scoops that have been very true on, Suicide Squad.
And Suicide Squad, I mean, you know, like Miembe has said in recent days or, you know, in the past week or two, they are really locking a lot of the character stuff down.
Yeah.
You know, they want to do a lot of reveals, I guess, closer to Comic-Con or whatever. It has been a little bit tricky. And on that note, you know, this is going to be part two of the DC scoopage. I heard, you know, I was talking to Justin Kroll over at Variety.
Yep.
We were, you know, swapping notes as we do.
Mm-hmm.
And he had mentioned that he had heard that Scott Eastwood is not playing Steve Trevor.
Really?
Huh.
Okay.
Eh.
So what Justin had heard was that Scott Eastwood basically had the choice. He could have a role in Suicide Squad, a smaller role, or he could test for the male lead in Wonder Woman alongside guys like Alexander Skarsgård and Liam Hemsworth.
Mm.
And he chose the Suicide Squad role. So we don't know what that role is. I'm told that he signed on for three pictures.
Okay.
But it's not clear if Wonder Woman is actually one of them.
Okay.
Hmm.
He's Deathstroke or Deadshot or Killer Croc.
I don't know.
I forget.
He's Ares for some reason.
Nightwing.
Oh, who, Ares. That'd be interesting.
Who knows?
Yeah.
But, all I know is he is dash handsome. I saw The Longest Ride.
Yeah.
And he's shirtless for a lot of it.
Yeah. So I mean, great. Warner Brothers thinks he's going to be a big star. He's obviously the son of Clint Eastwood, who has made them a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems like the role of Steve Trevor is still open, and that they are not going back to those guys for testing now that they have a new director. Like, that was sort of the direction they were going in the male lead for Wonder Woman when it was under Michelle McLaren's tenure.
Okay, right. Interesting.
And we're going to get into that in a second, too.
We will, yeah. And guys, I see you on the chat boards here. You know, these scoops that we get, these things change. You hear one thing.
They do.
It's like, I don't want to get into this. See, he was wrong. Yeah, you know? No. Like, that's like...
Yeah, absolutely not, guys. I mean, and I guess Miami broke both of those sort of character things.
Sure, and I'm not even referring to him, but I mean, I think some of you are, and I think it's come to us on Schmoes. No, I'm sure it's come to you, Jeff. I don't know if it's come to you, William.
I've got all kinds of things wrong. I'm just saying, don't get the pitchforks out and go after El Mayimbe or anything.
Right. I mean, these things change. They're very fluid. Sometimes you can hear... And I'm sure, do you get crossed wires?
There's cross wires and there's misinformation. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, given how much Mayimbe has broken lately, if someone was kind of trying to mess with him maybe a little bit. And the drafts constantly change and things like that, too.
But you have to admit, I think that from an audience perspective, people who aren't, you know, either journalists or even the filmmakers themselves in studios, that's frustrating. And sometimes it doesn't necessarily even feel like journalism.
Sure.
You know, it's like, oh, well, we heard this. Okay, who are your sources? Well, we're not going to tell you. Okay, well, why should I believe that? Well, I was right all these times, but you were also not right these times. Well, yeah, okay, but then they changed their plans. Okay, but then why is that a story? You know, like, it can be weird and frustrating, I think, from that side. So I'm sympathetic, I think is my point.
Okay. Yeah.
I understand that's frustrating. And, sometimes it's frustrating to me. Sometimes a news story breaks and I'm like, who does that benefit?
And we could be wrong too, guys. Again, this isn't, you know, none of this stuff's confirmed by Warner Brothers or anything like that.
Right.
But that is what we're hearing, that Scott Eastwood is in fact not playing Steve Trevor. He's playing somebody else in Suicide Squad, and that the Steve Trevor role remains open for Wonder Woman.
Yeah, people are dropping in. Dick Grayson. I don't know if I'm, you know, the chat's going hot right now. I love this. The chat is hot. So people are throwing in, I might have missed it, but Dick Grayson is Robin. So I don't know if that could be.
I have no idea.
You know, again, guys, we're kind of pulling back the curtain, and you're just hearing back and forth conversations. Nothing's going to print yet, I'm assuming.
I haven't printed anything.
If you are talking about it here, you know, then
it's the Fox News approach. We're talking about it because people are talking about it. Right. That makes
news. That's right.
Yeah.
But people will, you know, they do cover us here.
Sure.
Which is awesome, and I'm so appreciative.
And so the last part of our DC Scoop trilogy today.
Yes.
I have heard from several agency sources that Warner Brothers is currently casting for Green Lantern,
The
character.
Yeah.
John Stewart.
Oh, I love that.
Not the Daily Show host, character.
Character. Yeah. So guys, let's pause a moment for that, because I think not only is it smart and interesting because we had the Green Lantern debacle
with Ryan Reynolds as
Hal Jordan. A lot of people have been clamoring for John Stewart, the African American John Stewart, to be Green Lantern. I love that. I absolutely love that. Would want to see it. So,
well,
William,
your thoughts? He's a great character.
Yes.
John Stewart, I mean, first off, actually, pretty much all the Green Lanterns are great characters.
Yeah.
Like, I one day I hope to see a Guy Gardner movie, but whatever, you know, like.
Right. That's a good call.
It is. But, like, you know, they used John Stewart in a very clever way when they did Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, the animated series, which was they had already established that Hal Jordan exists in this universe, but it wasn't that interesting, really. So we bring in John Stewart, who brings in a very different dynamic to a superhero world. Although, I don't know, in the movies, though, I mean, John Stewart's often played as much more serious, you know.
Yeah.
They changed him eventually so that he was a Marine or a soldier. One, you know, some form of the armed forces. And that made him a bit more stern. He's a funny guy, but, you know, and I see how gritty it looks like they're doing all of the DC movies. And I just, like, almost, I want more wiseacres involved. But regardless, John Stewart, awesome character. I'm so happy if this is true. And I hope it is, because, dude, badass.
Yeah.
I think it also, it keeps Cyborg from sort of being
the token
black in the Justice League. Yeah, like, oh, well, that's our black guy, and so we're good.
And what do you think of this? We got some chatters here. They're saying, one, Idris Elba for John Stewart, which he'd be great. I think too old, though. It just
depends on where you go. Yeah, there's no reason why he has to be young.
A lot of people are calling out as PC bullshit. And I am understanding of that comment.
He exists as a character. I might understand that idea if you were just randomly changing his ethnicity. But the other thing is, I only, you know, the idea of changing someone's ethnicity or even their gender in a story, I think is only an issue if their ethnicity or gender was wrapped up in who their character was.
Right.
You know, like you couldn't, I'm trying to think of an example.
He casts a white guy as Black Panther.
Like, yeah,
right.
You can't,
right.
Exactly. But if, you know, when they cast, Kingpin in the Daredevil movie with Michael Clark Duncan,
right. Yeah.
the fact that the Kingpin was white in the comics really didn't define him as a character.
No, not at all.
It didn't matter. Like, it was, no. there were other huge problems with that movie, but like, you know, like, yeah. That certainly wasn't one of them. Michael Clark Duncan was fine. Although Vincent D'Onofrio is even better. But anyway, my point is that why is it should not be a problem. It's not like there's any dearth of white characters for us to see in films.
Yeah. Right? And it might be PC, but I kind of look at it at the creative standpoint of from, The Green Lantern movie with Hal Jordan was a bomb. And if they want to reinvent this franchise, this shared universe, it's like, it's interesting to go to the next Green Lantern, which is Jon Stewart. Mm-hmm. So, why not?
And you still have Hal out there somewhere.
Yeah, Hal can be out there.
There's tons of Green Lanterns. There's literally thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of Green Lanterns out there in the universe. Hal's there. You can bring him back again. Team up. Cool.
Right. And I know Mayim Bey had reported that that Ezra Miller was going to be playing Barry Allen.
Right.
That wasn't that officially announced? Oh, Barry Allen specifically. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
So... Yeah.
We
all right.
This Me. DC universe is really starting to take shape. It's very exciting.
Right. We have more to discuss on the DC front.
Yeah, so please.
Oh, so okay. So last week there was I guess it was Boris Kitt at the Hollywood Reporter dropped a story about James Wan circling right. Aquaman.
Right.
And it sounds like there have been some discussions there. It's unclear if he's going to do it, you know, if Universal is going to sort of enforce its option on him for Fast 8.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a big I was getting tweeted all weekend because, you know, big news broke while I was on my vacation. Mm-hmm. But I was trying to get back to you guys, and he is circling right now. There is that option at Universal. So Universal could say, no, you're doing Fast 8. Mm-hmm. So
and he's doing The Conjuring 2 next anyways.
And he's doing Conjuring 2. So do you – I don't know. Did you guys all see Fast 7?
Yeah.
Or Furious 7, whatever it's
Furious
called.
Furious 7, yeah.
I did too. I thought he actually killed it in the directing. I thought he had a very good visual style. I really liked it. Do I think he would be good for Aquaman? I don't know. I can't put my head around
it
yet.
He's been evolving very effectively as a director, I think.
Sure.
I think if you look at his initial films, there was obviously a lot of talent involved, but he hadn't. Like, then I saw The Conjuring. I'm like, oh, he's amazing. Oh,
Conjuring
neat.
Is one of my favorite horror movies of all time. It is definitely in the top five.
Certainly in the last few years. I mean,
just
holy cow.
Absolutely
yeah.
dig it.
Absolutely amazing. And then Furious 7, you know, I have a few issues with Furious 7, but honestly, the fact that film came out at all like a real movie, given all the stuff they had to do.
Right.
I interviewed James Wan for this, and he was just like, man, if even if people say it's meh, you have no idea how hard it was to get to meh. He compared it to landing a burning plane, you know? It's just so good for him, you know? And Aquaman, you know, Aquaman's a cool character. I don't care what anyone says.
I
always think he's awesome. Aquaman was lame once in a cartoon that came out like decades before you were born.
Thank you. And that stuck with the poor guy.
That's
just
not
because
fair.
He rode a seahorse in a cartoon doesn't make him a dork.
Yeah,
all
exactly.
Right?
This would be like if everyone still thought Batman was kind of lame and campy because of Adam West. No,
thank you.
That's a good show, but like, it had nothing to do with it.
I think Momoa's interpretation is going to be awesome.
I
think
agree.
It'd be really great if he was really campy, actually. Mm-hmm. Momoa played it really silly, you know.
I just want him riding into large seahorse. That's all I want. just put those haters down.
Last week's show, we talked about Lord and Miller maybe coming on The Flash, and now we have more director news in the DC universe.
Okay.
Patty Jenkins is officially taking over Wonder Woman from Michelle McLaren.
Yeah,
which caught a lot of people by surprise this week.
Absolutely, me included. I thought it was interesting that McLaren left. Due to creative differences.
Right.
Jenkins left Thor 2.
Due to creative differences. Right.
I wrote it in my article when I posted it. It's just, how does this work for Jenkins now? Is she walking into another lose situation? If she's if McLaren left, why is DC going, don't worry, you're safe, Jenkins. Do what we want.
Right.
I mean, because that's what it seems like. It's like you have to adhere to the DC shared universe.
Well, you have to do that to the Marvel universe as well.
Sure.
When you do a cinematic universe, not just sequels, but like when everything has to kind of gel together, it becomes way more like directing for a TV show. You know, you don't just direct Breaking Bad, for example. You make sure you can direct like Breaking Bad in order to direct for that show.
Yeah.
So, Michelle McLaren was going to have to basically do what the studio wanted her to do. Patty Jenkins is going to have to do the same thing. I assume that whatever the creative differences were, must have been different creative differences, you know, like maybe Thor-specific creative differences, but her ideas for Wonder Woman are awesome, for example. Then again, when someone pointed this out, and I was like, oh yeah, she left Thor 2, Thor the Dark World, over creative differences, and then look how Thor the Dark World turned out. And it's not the best Marvel movie by a long shot.
No.
Like, here's a
no.
lot of problems.
I think
with that
Thor,
film.
The original, is fantastic
I
over
do too.
Dark World.
I don't know that anyone has gotten to the heart of why Michelle McLaren really left. I think, you know, Devin sort of, you know, talked about the tiger thing.
Oh, I didn't. I missed
this. Do you want a Takitani in it?
Yeah, that's what it sounded like, according to Devin.
Oh, that would have been fun.
You know, I've had people just be like, did she ever really intend to, like, direct this thing? Because now she's sort of Wonder Woman director Michelle McLaren.
Right.
You know, she still has, like, all the heat of directing a Wonder Woman movie, even though she didn't actually make it.
Well, they're looking for someone to direct Captain Marvel. Like, just
wouldn't that be funny?
I had also heard that maybe her reps pressured her into it. Like, this is Wonder Woman. Like, you got to take this gig. You can't turn this down. And then, you know, she start developing it, and she realized how maybe tied in this film has to be with the larger universe, and she's just like...
She's like, I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just not her sensibility, you know? I mean, maybe that's it. Maybe she was just like, you know what? It's like when David Lynch was offered Return of the Jedi. How awesome would that have been? Well, not to David Lynch.
Right.
He was looking at it like, that's a Wookiee? I don't even know what the hell you're talking about. Like, he gave up because he didn't have the passion.
Just because we have talented female directors, and we need female directors for these certain comic book projects, properties doesn't necessarily mean that they're the best fit.
Yeah.
You know?
Specifically that director,
right.
Anyway.
Yes.
Creative differences is a very vague term.
It can mean a ton of things. It's like irreconcilable differences.
Exactly.
For divorce. That can mean, you know, he watched shows on Netflix without me, or she cheated on me. Like, it could be anything.
And
you know?
People were surprised at how quickly Patty Jenkins signed on to replace her. But I also think that, first of all, Michelle McLaren probably left the Wonder Woman before we knew that she did, you know, before it was reported.
Sure.
So Patty Jenkins was already being spoken
exactly.
to, probably.
It was like 2 days later. I was wondering why they didn't just
And it was a closed deal, too, the way it was reported.
Do you think Patty Jenkins was up for the role initially? And then when McLaren dropped out, they were like, well, let's go back and revisit this.
Yeah, maybe
they
had already discussed it with her.
That's my thought, is that because of Thor, she was possibly up for this
also
in the
beginning.
Because
she's a good director. Yeah.
But her resume is fantastic, guys. I'm very excited for this. I'm glad they stuck with the women. I mean, you know, it's a very hot button topic. A lot of people are like, oh, you don't necessarily need a woman to direct a woman movie. You don't necessarily need... Look.
You ask any male filmmaker, especially a male screenwriter, capturing a female voice when you live in a very male-dominated society is incredibly difficult.
Right.
And you know, it's a problem.
Sure.
And so you want to get someone who understands that perspective to tell that story. And yes, lots of great movies about women have been directed by men, but there aren't a lot of great... You know, there aren't a lot of movies, period, being directed by women at all. Why is that okay? Like, why, when we try to do something about that and try to actually make sure women direct more movies and give them an opportunity and help try to make the industry more fair, why would we jump on that? Like, why would that be negative? It's not like guys, like, inherently, because of their maleness, are having trouble finding features to direct. There are people finding features to direct because there's only so many, but men dominate the industry. Why is that a problem?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
And it kind of goes into, do we absolutely need a black director for Black Panther? I think it fits more with his character. I think it can work wonderfully. And I'd love listening and watching some of Ask Elmi NBA last night on the tweet machine. He said dream director would be, am I going to get F. Gary Gray?
Yeah. Oh, with
that
coming
would be
off the street out of Compton,
fantastic.
He's going to have a lot of heat.
That'd be fantastic.
He's awesome, yeah.
But would you be surprised if a white director did it? I wouldn't be.
I'd be surprised, but I have heard, you know, I've heard one black director and one white director.
Okay.
Those are the names that I've heard for Black Panther at this point. I'm not going to put them out there now.
But how about a white woman director?
Why not?
Why not, right?
Screw it.
Why not? I don't see why not.
If no one has a problem with, like, you know, men directing women movies about women, why can't movies direct movies about men or different ethnicities?
Let's keep in mind, Wonder Woman has a male screenwriter.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's It's God. At the end of the day, just get the right person.
And speaking and speaking of writers, we did get Captain Marvel got writers this week.
Yep,
it sure it's gonna be Nicole Perlman who did Guardians of the Galaxy. And then it is it Megan?
What? Yeah,
yeah. I'm like I'm already
totally
blanking. But the writer of the co-writer of Pixar's Inside Out,
right?
Which looks like the best Pixar movie in some in several years.
It looks
years.
Really good. Yeah.
Looks so
very
good.
Original. So. Well, except for Herman's Head, but yeah.
But again, I think Marvel is committed to getting a female filmmaker for Captain Marvel, and it was nice to see them not get not just one but two female screenwriters on that movie.
Yeah, I agree with that, and it was interesting that news that came out that it was Angelina Jolie up for both Captain Marvel and Wonder Woman, and then not 3 hours later, Patty Jenkins comes in. I didn't even.
That's a tough one for our friend Frosty at Collider.
I know he took it well. He took it well, like a champ. He said
he did. He had a good sense of humor about it.
He did. Guys, I wish you dropped this 3 hours earlier, Boris.
I mean Angelina Jolie, Captain Marvel, Wonder Woman. Yeah, I'm sure in an ideal world, Marvel and DC would both love her. I just don't see Angelina Jolie sacrificing her freedom as a filmmaker, you know, to service a studio's vision.
Yeah.
No.
I've been hearing Angelina Jolie. I actually have a source. I didn't follow up with this. You know,
for Captain Marvel, not for
Captain
Wonder
Marvel.
Woman.
Yeah. Captain Marvel, I've heard that they're essentially backing up a Brinks truck, trying to get her.
Right, that was Us Weekly's thing. They offered her $20 million.
Oh, really? Yeah, I don't know about that.
Staggering.
I just, you know, it is staggering.
But yeah, she hasn't worked with Warner Brothers since Alexander.
Right.
It's not like a studio that has a really tight relationship with Angie, whereas Disney does after Maleficent.
Whether it happens or not, we don't know. It's just what we're hearing. I actually don't think she'll end up doing it.
I would be very, very surprised, honestly, based on, you know, the talk I've heard about just what she's looking for artistically, and also just, you know, what it was like on that set working with her. It didn't sound like that kind of like well-oiled machine. It sounded like a bit more, you know, she's figuring out like what she wants artistically.
Who is that?
And that's a little difficult.
Who is the name? Lexi Alexander tweeted out some name like this is the person who's going to direct Captain Marvel.
I think she might have just said she should have, but it's this woman. I forget her name, but she directed a lot of episodes of Arrow and like
right,
really
Arrow
kick-ass episodes
Gotham.
Of Arrow.
Yeah, it seemed like actually not a bad call.
I'm fine with that. If you want to get any of the directors on Arrow to do a feature film, I mean, Arrow does more with like a TV budget than frankly a lot of superhero movies do with $200 million.
Right.
It's such a cool show. Like, I would be fine with that. Good.
So we are going to switch gears from DC to Marvel now.
Okay.
And I want to start with you. You wanted to talk about Spider-Man a little, right?
We had some, along with all this other news over the weekend, we had some info on Spider-Man. Spider-Man came out. We had a scoop by Mr. Bibbiani here. Go into a little bit about how you found out it's not an origin story.
Right.
And that the costume has been designed. I find that interesting.
Well, but, I mean, I sat down with Kevin Feige and I asked him to his face. I was like, is this going to be an origin story? A lot of people think we don't need an origin story.
I'm glad
like,
no
origin story.
We don't need it.
No, we don't. And he had that tack as well. It's the thing is you can do an origin story, but the movie doesn't all have to be about the origin story. And the way it sounds like what he wants to do is it'll be alluded to, maybe a couple of quick flashbacks.
That's
but
what I was thinking.
We're going to track. It's just going to move. Everyone knows it. We'll just make sure we know exactly how it happened in this version, and then we move on, and the whole story is not about his origin. He also talked about how they have redesigned the costume. He's called it Classic Spidey, but he also said it's different than everything we've seen before. And I don't know. I thought Amazing Spider-Man 2 was pretty Classic Spidey. Like, what are you going to do? Like, the really black
Spider-Man
Steve Ditko eyes?
Spider-Man
like,
has looked the same in every one of the movies, and what I'm curious about, how is it not going to be an origin story, though, if the kids 15 or 16.
Well, you just don't have to see him
like,
get...
when did he become Spider-Man?
He got bit by a spider, and then he started screwing around in a costume. I mean, that's what he said. There's a kid right now in a homemade Spider-Man costume in the Marvel Universe swinging around New York, and just we haven't noticed yet.
Okay. See, that's,
you know?
That's cool.
I think that's a great
way
of putting
cool.
it. That is a way to say something that I'm just like, you know, that's neat.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. That's because I can already picture it.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's really cool.
It kind of has a Daredevil feel to it,
yeah.
at least the Netflix version.
You know,
where,
here's the thing. You know, all the Marvel properties, with the exception of Daredevil so far, like the official Marvel Studios ones,
sure.
not like the Lionsgate or whatever, they've been very big, looking at big issues, world-threatening stuff, you know, world leaders and gods and aliens, and we really haven't had anything street-level until, like, this last week.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, Daredevil is great. great. Let's talk level. About holy cow.
Can we talk?
It's I'm just saying, Spider-Man so is the same phenomenal. Basic thing. He fights mad scientists who rob banks, but other than that, he's street level.
Yeah, he is street level.
Daredevil is the best thing Marvel has ever done, in my opinion.
I'm kind of there with you, man.
Just about. I mean, it's certainly right up there, yeah.
It is some of the most phenomenal filmmaking.
Oh, some of it's amazing.
Acting, writing. Yeah. I immediately...
I loved it.
Matt Murdock, Charlie Cox is Matt Murdock. I mean, he just sucked me in. And so did D'Onofrio's Kingpin.
D'Onofrio should get an Emmy for this. He's so amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
His introduction as the Kingpin was flawless, beautiful, scary as shit.
Unexpected. Like really didn't come
he
the way
was
thought
creepy
it was.
To me.
He was like Hannibal Lecter.
He was Hannibal Lecter. And then I knew something. I mean, everybody's seen it, right? I mean, the spoiler, his guy. You haven't seen it. Stephen's going to step
our
out.
He's taking off his.
No, right. Just there's just a scene where it's just like he's on the phone. Yeah. No, he's here. No, in the passenger side.
Oh, that's right, such right. a
great... That got me, I'm like,
that's
okay.
That's also when the show gets hard R-rated, and I was like, I thought some kids might see this show, and now people
just... It's super violent.
It's super violent. It is, but it is incredible, and what it does is so amazing to me is that it explores issues in a way that, like, really only Captain America the Winter Soldier had even touched on in the Marvel Universe before. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, there are themes, but, like, this is about serious, complicated issues. There's a reason people are comparing the show to
The Wire. Yep.
Yeah.
Part of it is structurally, because we really do spend... as much time on the criminal side as we do on the hero side, mm-hmm. and we also get to sympathize with, and that's what makes Kingpin so fascinating.
Yep.
The first episode of the Kingpin on the show is him being sympathetic for most of it. Like,
Thank you.
Just you like him.
You're like, you're such an awkward guy.
You want him to get the girl.
You want him to get the girl.
You know, we look at like a lot of superhero stories and we think, oh, well, the villain has to be like the reverse of the hero, and sometimes that just gets kind of corny. Here, it's functionally very beautiful, actually, because they both think they're doing the right thing, and they're both men of such powerful will, regardless of what resources are at their disposal, that they are destroying each other over the course of the show. And it feels Dickensian. Like, holy crap.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's so good. Like, it's so good. I love it.
Well, I want to kind of get back to Spider-Man because I feel like you could learn a lot. You said it, and you made me think about this, William, with the street-level superhero that's not taking on the aliens.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what Marvel... What?
Stop hitting the desk.
Oh, is it making a...
Yeah, you're...
I'm making a point!
You're terrible.
Okay. But I just feel like...
You ever hosted a podcast before, Mark?
Never, never. This is my first. But it feels like that they could learn something from Spider-Man there, because we also now get that no origin story... what else? He's in high school. I think they have something really special to do there that they didn't do in the old movies. But what's my point with this?
Well,
that
I think
you can't go hard R, obviously.
With Spider-Man. He's got to be.
Yeah.
For kids. The other thing that is interesting, and it's the other thing only Daredevil has really done in the Marvel Universe, is a secret identity.
Right.
Marvel has basically eschewed that almost entirely.
Yeah. Like,
which is one of the first mission statements. The end of Iron Man is screwing up Iron Man. Hi.
Yeah.
Like, they've never bothered. Really. Everyone knows who Steve Rogers is. I mean, the spies, but no one really cares about who. Like, who is Hawkeye? No one cares who. I love Hawkeye, but no one cares who Hawkeye is in that way. Spider-Man, you know, that's a big part of him. Who is this guy swinging around our city? Is he dangerous? Is he a good thing? You know, that's a huge part of who he is.
Which I hope they do. I really hope they go further into that, because I don't think the movies did that. All of them.
Yeah.
All of the previous Spider-Man movies didn't really get into the juggling act that is high school Peter Parker.
Yeah.
His secret identity.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of touched on it. I love it with Daredevil. I love, oh my God, I could talk forever on this. It really has changed, like, the superhero and Netflix. I just think we could get a Punisher.
We could get a great Punisher
on Netflix. That would be, that would be my vote.
Daredevil reminded me of my favorite comic book property, The Crow.
Thank you.
So, I can see that.
Good call.
That works.
Yeah.
It reminded me of the best runs on Daredevil. There were times when Daredevil was easily the best superhero comic book on the stand for years at a time.
Oh, me too. Yeah. I followed along with Daredevil through some of the Miller run, Kevin Smith, and then Bendis.
I'm not the biggest Bendis fan, but man, his run on Daredevil was epic.
It was so amazing. It was interesting talking about Spider-Man. He was doing Daredevil and Ultimate Spider-Man.
That's true.
At that time,
in
the comics, we're geeking out.
We are totally geeking out. Anyway, we like comics.
We like comics.
We're on the internet, so we like comics.
Now, have you guys seen Ultron yet?
I have.
I have not seen it yet.
I technically like.
You went to the premiere.
Yeah, I went to the premiere this week. It was fine. You know, it was a crazy circus zoo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was fun to see it with that audience or whatever. But I was still disappointed.
The
Avengers are not my kinds of movies. I prefer something like Daredevil, which is a little bit grittier and more grounded.
The Avengers are popcorn movies. I think I've seen it. I'm technically embargoed, and I.
When is the embargo?
Because 21st is my.
No one has mentioned the embargo.
There's social media. We're allowed to all this stuff is complicated, and it's just a matter of being respectful to people who give you an opportunity to write about the film in advance. So I follow embargoes as a gesture of respect. But I was allowed to give it on social media, so I can give the gist of it. The thing with the Avengers, and even the first Avengers, it was a miracle it worked.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. The only time anyone had ever tried anything remotely like that were like in Destroy All Monsters and Abbott and Costello meet the Wolfman, or whatever, whichever one came first. Like that kind of all-star team up. But it was really done in a way that it really had never been done before, trying to balance them all together. And the movie's got flaws, but who cares? It's awesome. Like when it works so well.
Yeah.
Age of Ultron, I feel like I feel like audiences might have built it up too much. This is kind of what I was talking about anticipation earlier
sure,
on the show.
Sure.
I think we all expect this to be this huge, game-changing, world-changing, this is going to, you know, reshape how we think of superhero movies. Oh, my God, what if they haven't? They've shown us in the trailers. When it comes right down to it, no matter what happens in this movie, and I'm not going to spoil a thing, what this movie boils down to functionally for the audience is we're going to get all these superheroes together. They're going to, like, say funny stuff, and they're going to hang out, and they're going to beat up robots. That's enough for me. That's good. Whatever else it may or may not do, and again, no spoilers, that's cool. And I thought they did that in a cool way.
Did you like it more or less than the first one?
I think the first one is a unicorn. Like, I feel like you can't even compare it. You know, like, I feel like, you know, it's just the first one, there will never be that again. That first time someone tried this. So I think it's an unfair comparison. I would probably a little less because of that, if nothing else.
And did you like the two new additions?
Yes.
Yeah,
I thought they were cool.
I liked them too. I thought they were cool.
Yeah.
But to me, the problem with the movie is basically simplified by a little passage of dialogue from Hawkeye, and I'm gonna say what it is and move on. But there's a line in Avengers: Age of Ultron where Hawkeye is like, "We're in a flying city. We're fighting a robot army. I have a bow and arrow, and this makes no sense." And I was just sitting there being like, yeah, you're right. This doesn't make any sense.
None of it makes any sense. We've got alien Norse gods, for crying out loud.
That's the filmmaker saying, just go with it. Yeah. That's my interpretation.
It's probably a little too meta for its own good.
I prefer a human villain like Kingpin to robots and crap.
Kingpin is the best live-action Marvel villain I've ever seen on screen.
Right, because they have a bit of a villain problem, I think, over there.
Generally.
All right, let's move on.
Okay.
We still have a lot because I'd like to talk about, you pick. Ryan Gosling in Blade Runner.
Neat.
Okay.
Neat.
So that release came in yesterday afternoon.
Yep. Yep, I got it.
And Alcon is the only company in Hollywood that loves to send press releases.
Yep. I am on that
people
list.
Being in negotiations. So it's like, hey, it's not official, but he's officially in negotiations.
Please write about our film.
Right. Yeah. It's been a crazy week for Ryan Gosling. He has signed on or been reported as being in negotiations for 3 different movies. Maybe that's because he just had a baby, right?
Sure. Yeah. Is that how that works? They want to take him away from his child. Like, how does that work?
I need to set up the college fund in three months.
That's
of work.
The thing, Ryan Gosling. He does a lot of indies. He doesn't really take a lot of paid check gigs.
No, he really.
And these two are huge franchises.
Yeah, Blade Runner and Haunted Mansion. Guillermo del Toro's Disney movie. I think he's a great fit for both. He's a guy with that sort of dark sensibility. If you ever listened to his music.
His music's awesome.
Yeah, I really like his band.
His music's really good. What are they called again? Dead Man's Bones. Listen to that album. That album is great.
Really good album.
Yeah, really good.
You know, you can see it in his directorial debut, Lost River, which may not be that good, but
it is
his sensibilities on the screen. He's not trying to please anybody. So I think it's really cool, and I really like, you know, Denis Villeneuve, I believe.
Yeah, Villeneuve.
You're Italian.
French, it's Vinoy. Yeah.
Well, I think his sensibilities, at least I haven't seen Enemy. Prisoners, however.
Prisoners amazing.
Is an amazing movie.
I thought it was all right.
You thought it was all right?
I thought Overplayed its hand a bit, but it, when it's good, it's great.
I'm excited for Sicario, too, which just got into Cannes.
Right.
Yeah.
I think he's great for it. I'm not excited for Blade Runner 2, honestly, especially if it's going to be, you know, more. I mean, I guess if it's going to be about Gosling and not really about Deckard, but even if Harrison Ford shows up in there at all, what that does is that we just wrapped up what was supposed to be an ambiguous ending. We just retroactively heard it. I'm like, no, don't do that.
I thought about that too because there are very. I love when I hear there's going to be another Alien movie or Prometheus. Even I was got kind of interested to see
what it
was.
Idea.
It was a neat idea. Blade Runner, I'm so mixed, and I go back and forth every day. I don't necessarily want one, but am I going to see it?
Yeah, maybe it'll be good, but I don't know. Like when you talk about doing something, it was like when they did the Bourne Legacy, and they said, "Oh, incidentally, Matt Damon was on Captain America pills for the last three films, and we just never talked about it." Wait, what?
Right?
Why did you just ruin like the three best action movie trilogy in a long time? Why did you do that?
Right.
Because Jeremy Renner needed chems. Like, I don't know.
I don't know.
Where are the chems?
I'm not a big Blade Runner guy, but Ryan Gosling's involvement goes a long way for me.
I'm now interested. I'm kind of jumping off of what you said. I love that if it could be Gosling starring in it and we have a supporting Deckard, but then,
if Deckard shows up, you're already affecting Blade Runner. It's like, you know, people say, oh, it doesn't matter if we do like a sequel, the original, still the original. You can actually completely screw
it up. I think Gosling would be the lead. I don't think that studios want Harrison Ford front and center.
No, I think they're doing the same with Star Wars. I've heard different things. It's his movie, but it's obvious that we have Daisy Ridley and John Boyega doing they're the protagonists in Star Wars.
I don't have information to back this up, but I'd be willing to bet it's his movie the way that Star Wars is Sir Alec Guinness's movie. You know, like he's important, he's there.
Come on, it's gotta
be about the kids.
That's a very good point, and I can get behind that.
Okay.
So.
A few other things. We got to do some quick bits here because we only got about 5 minutes left in the show.
Yeah.
Matthew Vaughn's directing a Flash Gordon movie.
I love that. That's perfect.
Flash Gordon missed me. I'm not...
Really?
I can't even look at the movie and go, how did you... I just didn't see it as a kid. I didn't get into it. It's B-movie to me. I know that's the intention behind... So...
Totally with you. B movie, terrible. Matthew Vaughn, what are you thinking?
I will defend Flash Gordon to the death. I love that movie. Well, first off, you've got to remember, it came from, was it Lorenzo Semple Jr., the guy who wrote the Batman live action series? It's intended to be camp. It's supposed to be broad and silly, and it is. And it's great. Flash, I love you, but we only have 14 hours to save the Earth. Awesome line. Thank you for that. We got Brian Blessed in a Hawkman. Gordon's alive. The best music score, like, music soundtrack of any movie ever.
This is for hardcore geeks. I have no idea who this movie.
Hardcore geeks.
I have no idea who this movie.
Here we go.
Thank you.
Here it comes, everyone. Matthew Vaughn. Now,
dude, I love this guy.
See,
I love it.
Christian Harloff. Loves that movie.
I have no idea who this movie is for.
It is for people who like
fun. Do not give a shit about Flash Gordon.
Well, you cannot.
He was a joke in a Ted movie. That's how pathetic the character is.
Joke? I thought that was actually very loving.
A loving joke.
Those kids grew up with Flash Gordon and they love Flash Gordon. Flash Gordon is one of the most important characters and stories in all of geek culture, whether or not you appreciate him.
Sure. People said that about John Carter of Mars, too, and look how that movie
turned out. John Carter of Mars is not that bad a movie, actually. I'm just going to say that right now. John Carter of Mars is not a terrible movie. People jumped on that thing for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Look, here's the thing. We were running out of the major properties to adapt. That's what it boils down to. Remember, like, after Batman came around, like, people were nervous about doing more superhero movies, so they did more pulp stuff, like The Shadow, which also isn't a terrible movie, The Phantom, which is a terrible movie.
Yeah.
I rewatched The Shadow recently. That movie holds up a little better than you think.
Okay.
But my point is that there's this whole entire realm of narrative fiction in a genre medium that really hasn't been touched, and if someone like Matthew Vaughn can sort of put his stamp on it and make it seem awesome to a new generation, that opens up doors for more content that is relatively original because it started these things before they became codified. So Flash Gordon is a lot more freewheeling and crazy and I think has a lot more potential as an interesting franchise that I think you're giving it credit for. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
I think Matthew Vaughn can do something interesting.
He's always interesting.
Yeah. One of my friends on Facebook, when I posted the link, they were like, unless he does a batshit and crazy B-movie version updated, then I don't see this working because this is a Flash Gordon fan.
Yeah.
He was like, I love the B movie. I love how they did it. I just don't see how Matthew Vaughn can do it.
I look at the tone he captured in something like Kick-Ass, and I'm like, yeah, okay, that's Flash Gordon. That's about, it's more violent,
there
obviously.
You go.
But
yeah.
Like the action will be stylized. Matthew Vaughn's got a killer, like really wicked sense of humor.
Yeah.
Cool.
Great.
Done.
What else? We got maybe time for one or two more things.
I know that a lot of these guys, I'll throw it to the table here. The BVS leak trailer. Okay. Batman v Superman trailer was leaked. We all pretty much were in agreement.
I'm not
talking.
Posting that.
We didn't post it, guys.
No.
I know Variety did. That's for you to judge, not us here on the table, unless you want to judge.
I'm paranoid now that maybe someone on my website posted it without telling me. I want to double check.
Okay,
It would be entirely without my approval.
We did not, and I'm thankful that my writers didn't even ask, because I would have probably killed you.
If we have a date, and it's coming Monday, right?
Monday.
Well, yeah, I would just wait. I guess if it's we don't know when we're going to see it, and so we got to get it up there. I get that.
I don't even post teasers for trailers. I think that's the laziest form of marketing. It's we've got a trailer. We could show it to you now. But instead, we're going to show you this little tiny teaser and get it trending earlier just to exploit your enthusiasm. That's all it is.
Well,
and so the bootleg thing, even just letting you know, oh, the trailer's coming Monday. How is that news? It'll be out Monday. I don't care. That doesn't change your life. Your life isn't better for knowing that information.
The teasers for the teasers.
And I stayed quiet on Twitter. But when that teaser came out, the teaser for the teaser trailer, give me I'm sorry.
Stop that.
Credits and Superman suit and Batman suit. I was like,
especially if the,
who cares?
Yeah. It used to be a teaser was like an announcement. I remember actually it was a terrible movie, but there was a good teaser for Red Dragon that was just taking you back in Hannibal Lecter's cell, reminding you of the Sounds of the Lambs. It was kind of cool. And then the movie obviously was terrible, but that's all it used to be. But now it's we know you've been shooting it. We know you're showing a proper trailer in a couple of days.
Yeah.
I'll wait. Your life would be... Everyone who clicked on that, I understand the temptation and curiosity.
I did,
everyone clicked on that?
Clicked on it.
If you clicked on it Monday, would your life really have been worse? No. You would have gone over your weekend. You would have had something awesome on Monday, because Mondays suck, right? Garfield fans, come on.
Yeah. I hate Mondays. I do.
Mondays, right?
And yeah, guys, I got a lot of Twitter... some of my Twitter followers, I kind of held my tongue. You're asking what I thought about it. Then you were spoiling it for me. I don't understand that when you're posting actual dialogue from the trailer onto my Twitter feed when I actually want to see it the way it's supposed to be in the theater, possibly, hopefully. But when you're doing that and you're ruining it for me, I don't get it. I don't know why you're looking at a blurry video anyways. And I don't get why people post it on their website to get the clicks to be then pulled
then
down 5 minutes later.
Down,
I just don't get it. It's extra work for me.
Which is, anytime there's a scoop, I advise people to look at it this way. Who benefits from the scoop? Do you benefit from the scoop? Do the filmmakers benefit from the scoop? Does the film benefit from the scoop?
I think
the scoop is a plot point. And for something like that, that blurry teaser, who's benefiting from it? Just the website.
Right. Yeah.
That's it. That is not good journalism. It's not. It's actually very bad.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I'm not sympathetic. Sometimes it's we have to. We need the hits or our site will die. I understand that, but it's not cool.
I get covering the leak as a news
story.
Itself.
Thank
sure.
You.
Like, it,
I agree.
It has
that's
leaked, right?
Yeah.
No video. This is what
and
happened,
I, and
guys.
By the way, I do blame studios when things leak, because it is on them to lock down their marketing materials.
Right.
As far as I'm concerned.
And
But it's also on journalists to decide. I've had scoops before.
Oh, sure.
Where it was that would get me a lot of hits. It would also ruin the movie. I don't need the hits that bad.
Right.
Yeah.
No one does.
I'm ruining
a film.
I've had certain things that I'm like, I don't want to go there. I really don't want to go there, from whether it's relationships or not knowing enough, whatever.
I guess my point is, I think there is a journalistic responsibility to be able to say no.
Sure.
I'm with you.
And with this leak, it was interesting because it obviously played in a movie theater in Latin America somewhere.
Right.
So that is absolutely on Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
You put it out there before, we're in the look. Everybody has this. And they just... And that's out there.
And we just fart, apparently.
And we just fart.
Yeah.
So I guess that's a good place to wrap it up.
And we just
kind of got to go, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, guys. That's been Meet the Movie Press. Thank you, as always, for joining us. And William Bibbiani, where can the good people find you?
You can find my film criticism, editorials, and so forth at Crave Online. I also have the B-Movies podcast. We got Paul Feig on the show this week.
Nice.
Nick Kroll next week. Rob Cohen the week after that. That's on iTunes. Please subscribe.
Twitter handle?
My Twitter handle is at William Bibbiani, B-I-B-B-I-A-N-I.
Nice.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Jeff, of course.
Jeff Snyder. TheWrap.com, at The In Snyder. I'm around. You guys can find me.
Yeah, you can find Jeff anywhere, and William Bibbiani anywhere, and me anywhere, at Riley Around, and on Schmozno.com. Guys, rate, subscribe, comment, share this with your friends, please. It keeps the lights on here on the spaceship, which we love doing this every Friday. And check out the other shows on the Popcorn Talk Network. those that I mentioned at the top, which I always forget because there's so many wonderfulness. So guys, we'll see you next week. Thank you very much.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only, not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.